One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is Ross Coulthart, and you are listening to That UFO Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. My name is Andy, and joining me on a very special listener call-in are you, the listeners who attended recent Sol Symposium events and also congressional hearings. First up on the line, all the way from Philadelphia, I've got Mark joining me. Mark, how are you?
Hi, Andy. Thanks for having me on. I'm doing well.
Really good to have you on, and thank you for spending the time to join us on this. So speaking to some of you folks who were out there at the Sol Symposium and congressional hearings, Mark, you attended the Sol Symposium last weekend as we record this, didn't you?
Yes, I did. It was a two-day event over Friday and Saturday, with Friday being kind of the longer day of the two.
Awesome. So whereabouts was the event? What was the venue like? And tell us about that kind of initial experience.
Sure. Yeah. This was my first year going, and last year, obviously, I think they held it off at Stanford's campus. This one was in downtown San Francisco, out by the bay. You could actually see Alcatraz right from the event. The venue, they chose a really great venue. I was a little nervous about that because it was a little bit bigger this year. But they had a big kind of hall area that was set up with a lot of tables. That's where they serve food, allowed for different networking. And then towards the back was a larger theater where all of the different presenters, I guess, put up their...
Yeah, the presentations, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, done their presenting.
Yes.
So regarding this kind of event, and it's a symposium, it's not a conference. This isn't Contact in the Desert. This isn't Awakening. This isn't the Conscious Life Expo, is it? This is set up as a real, and this isn't a knock on those conferences, but it's not a UFO conference, is it, Mark?
No, and I'm passionate about this subject, but I was a little nervous that they're going to be selling like crazy alien t-shirts or something, because that wasn't the experience I was looking for. This was definitely a symposium. I've been to other conferences, not UAP, but just, you know, general conferences for industries, and you always have people out there, they're networking, but they're trying to sell. This was a lot of networking with people trying to figure out either how they can contribute or help try to understand the phenomena.
So take us through your thoughts then. It was on a Friday and Saturday. They're pretty long days, aren't they? And take us through that kind of first day, your standout, your thoughts, and yeah, just go for it, man.
Great. So the first day... Well, in general, it's very strange to see some of the, you know, like Tim Gallaudet, who had just testified the week before, walking around and talking with people. Like it was close enough. I could have gone up and asked Gary Nolan, like, hey, where's the bathroom again? It was intimate enough from that perspective. I also found that most everybody was very approachable. And also most everybody had an easy way to have a conversation because everyone just said, how did you get into this? So there was a lot of good discussions there.
I just say, Mark, that's really good to hear, because something I was wondering was, when you've got so many big names in the UFO, UAP field, academics, military, and you are mingling with folks who aren't well known or in that research field, if you want to call it that, would they be amicable? Would they like to chat? And was it a good atmosphere in that way that you could mix as a large group?
Absolutely. So, like, I don't have a PhD. I don't have a crazy top secret clearance, right? I'm a technology project manager. And so, you know, that's the only thing that I could bring to the conversation, that, and, you know, that, you know, my general knowledge. But talking with a lot of different people and asking them questions, like, people were very open. People were very curious. A lot of people talking about what they thought when what they had heard, you know, different people say at the conference. I will say, like, there was nothing earth-shattering that came out of the conference for anybody that follows this topic closely. And one of the persons I was talking with was kind of disappointed in that. And I reminded him, I said, this is just the building blocks, right? They're putting this testimony, they're putting this information, they're putting these findings out there, and that starts to build a foundation. And so from seeing that happen, I thought it was a very exciting event.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Much like I've often talked on the podcast about documentaries and books and whatnot, and conferences are never going to give you smoking gun evidence or proof of alien life or disclosure, whatever it is you're looking for, because that kind of, do you want to call it evidence, would be on the news. It would be within 24 hours. It would be a press conference set up with major networks invited around the globe and journalists there and mainstream media. These events aren't for that, are they? These are there for, like you say, people to network, people to discuss the topic, people to get involved who maybe weren't big names. And I wonder, what was that like? Were there folks there who were maybe newer to the subject that you got either to speak to or you kind of heard about, that they were just starting to dip their toe into this whole field?
Yes. So I talked to a couple of people that, like me, were this is like the first time they'd been there. But I mean, I'm talking to, you know, there's people that are working for banks and they're like, I'm into this. I'm trying to figure out, you know, what I can do. Where does that fit into, you know, my industry and just understanding it better. There's just a different feeling when you're there and you can see the reactions to people as people are talking on stage, or you see the discussions that are happening in the hallways, right? Like when you saw Carl Nell after he presented, I mean, he had a group of like probably eight people around him, and you know, they're telling us to leave the facility because it, you know, it's done. And he's sitting there, you know, happily answering questions. He was definitely an interesting event.
Do you want to talk us through day one then, and what were some of your big callouts and highlights and from those speakers?
Well, for that, I really enjoyed Ryan Graves and Leslie Keene. Really kind of focused on some of the stuff that Ryan's been up to recently. And I know he's been out there, but I don't know that I've really listened to much of him. And so that I thought was really helpful. And then Tim Gallaudet came on and spoke. And he was talking a little bit more about what the overarching UAP policy should be. And then even went back and, you know, he had previously talked about the anomaly off the California coast. And he said that's now debunked. I know he said, hey, I'd been saying this before, but now I talked to some geologists and they said this is actually a natural formation. So it was nice actually seeing somebody like walk back something they may have said before, or be able to be intellectually honest about, you know, what the findings are.
Yeah, massively important point. Yeah.
And then the other neat thing that they did with this is that then they had those two sessions and then they had a group discussion with Leslie, Ryan, and Tim Gallaudet. And so that kind of happened throughout the days as well, where they would have like sessions, and then from a couple of those sessions, they'd have like kind of like a round table where people would be able to ask questions, or there would be an additional conversation.
Do you remember, and I suppose this might be like when folks go to see a comedian and you say you had the best time and someone says, oh, what was one of the funny jokes? And you can't remember any of them. But do you remember any of the questions from the audience being put forward that got a particularly good answer?
No, but I will talk about my appreciation for Gary Nolan and Peter Skafish for controlling the discussion, because they wanted to allow for as many questions as possible. They tried to make that as fair as possible. But they got very good about keeping people on topic, making sure that things didn't get political. And so I appreciated the discipline that they kept to that. So that, I mean, seeing Gary Nolan kind of just interrupt everybody and say, nah, we're just going to go on to the next question. I thought that was a little humorous.
Was the general behavior good? And I'm presuming invite only and the professional levels of folks attending would point towards it being something where people were familiar with decorum, etiquette, how to handle themselves in these sorts of environments. So I take it wasn't too raucous or rowdy in that respect anyway?
No, it wasn't like raucous or rowdy from that perspective. I think everybody was pretty respectful of that. And I think most of the people that were asking questions would just spend so much time trying to say who they are and the reason why they're asking the question, that it you know, sometimes the question would lose its focus. But everybody was good from that perspective. You know, they did have to try to remind folks to, you know, not record audio, not live tweet it, which I did want to be kind of respectful of. Because you would hate like something to come out on one day and impact the discussion that you're having at the symposium either that day or the next day.
Yeah, I know that's something they were very keen on the previous year as well. On the day, it did seem there were quite a few either podcasters or X or Twitter accounts who were on site. And I think I did see quite a few people tweeting and whatnot. Is that something that was brought up, or do you think people just kind of generally kept to the policy in the best way?
I think they generally kept to the policy, but they did remind people, and then, you know, at one point in time said, hey, you know, if this continues and we're aware of it, we will, you know, we'll take action. I don't think that they had to take action on anybody, but I kind of agree with how they were trying to control that.
Any other standouts from day one?
Well, I think probably the biggest one was that at the end of the day was they showed the program.
Yeah.
So that was a special event. It was, you know, marked as such, but they didn't tell us that it was the program until the day of. Coming in the day of, it was probably one of the worst kept secrets, because I think pretty much all of us had guessed that. I would have thought it was that or maybe the other film from Ontocalypse. But we did get to see the program, and that was really exciting.
So we'll keep it completely spoiler-free, in complete respect of James Fox and his work. James will be joining me in the next couple of weeks. I'm waiting and getting my copy over. Hopefully I can get an advanced version from James just to review it. I'm very excited for it. Talking around the actual content, what can people expect?
I think for a lot of the people that are in depth on understanding that there is a program, there is still some very good information and some other folks that are going to be speaking in this, and there will be some additional details and context that kind of helps put all of that together. I was really excited to see it. I will still be very much excited to purchase it and show it to my wife as well. So I think if anybody who's been a fan of James Fox's work, they will not be disappointed with us.
Awesome. So do you want to take us on in day two? Because that completes day one, which no doubt was a long day for you.
Yes, it was. And I think the probably the real quick from day one, there was a conversation with Kurt McConnell, who was a long-time DC staffer, and Eric Davis. So watching them talk around the different legal things that have been going on recently and some of the history was interesting. They obviously have certain things that they're not allowed to say out loud. So there were, you know, questions that were asked that they had to kind of make sure that they answered around it appropriately. Awesome. Day two, I kicked off with Matt Pines and Gary Nolan. And I believe you've talked with Matt Pines before, but I am always very much impressed with his intelligence and his ability to synthesize the information and what's going on. And then Avi Loeb's presentation was really good. And I've heard him speak a lot. And I think that not only being intelligent and smart and brave for going after this, he's a heck of a salesperson as far as, you know, saying like, hey, with this funding, this is the information or this is what we can go after. So I hope he continues down that path. But him talking about his Skywatch project at Harvard, and talking about Oumuamua, and then they also showed some of the things they're planning to go back to the ocean and try to basically, with more money and bigger equipment, hopefully come up with bigger pieces of whatever crashed in the ocean.
And then there was a round table panel discussion, with Avi, Gary, and Beatrice. I don't know if you want to touch on Beatrice Villarreal's presentation as well.
No, she was great, and really kind of walked through, you know, why, you know, what are the challenges that scientists are facing, right? You know, as far as like the stigma, the ridicule. And I thought the funniest point that she brought up was that, like, it's okay to look for aliens far away, right? Like SETI, through telescopes, all of those things. But if you look for aliens, UFOs, whatever you want to call them, near Earth, well, that's a little bit more controversial. So I thought that was interesting. She also talked about kind of an anomaly in the Baltic Sea, which, like they said, was a burnt biological material. And so that was kind of interesting. And I think one of the other stats that she had called out was that there are 9 to 40 billion Earth-sized planets just in the Milky Way. And that math kind of hurts my head. I think humans in general have problems with exponentials, and that number's just too big for me.
I am with you on that, Mark. Even when I try and think about the universe not having an end to it, is wild that it's just infinite darkness, or the size of a galaxy, and then outside of a galaxy there being multiple galaxies. And these James Webb and Hubble telescope pictures are incredible, but also frightening, like you say, to comprehend the distances and everything else. But it's part of this subject, isn't it? Like it or love it.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's really what gets people into this topic, right? Because as soon as there's a greater chance, you know, greater than zero, right, you have that many of numbers, like, so that means that, you know, this could exist or these things are possible. So I do find that fascinating as well.
Crack on then. What's next? Was it the panel discussion or James Beauchamp?
Well, they did the panel discussion and just kind of covered some of the different things of, you know, they talked a little bit about the Fermi paradox. You know, Gary also talked about like, hey, like some of these, you know, von Neumann probes or these things, like the senders may have sent them out, but their civilization may have already died out. So the things we may be interacting with, their civilization may have already been long gone, which I, you know, is an interesting thing to think about. And I think Avi, you know, ending with, you know, it's important to chase the data rather than trying to assume answers, which I thought was interesting as well.
And then I think James is up next. I've not heard of James before, but his presentation, What is Reality?
Yes. And so if I'm remembering this correctly, this was the gentleman that was involved with the large, the collider.
Large Hadron Collider, yeah.
Yes, thank you so much. Out in Europe. And absolutely brilliant man. I think he was also brought in here outside of the normal physics, you know, physics that are used or reviewed this. So he was new to this topic and came in and kind of evaluated it. He did spend some time kind of like debunking some of the, you know, like the go fast and some of those, but he just kind of more in general said that there's, you know, basically there's a prosaic answer for all of those things and kind of just moved on. I think he did a good job of just trying to challenge the audience on, you know, some of the different current issues that there are. And then also talked about some of the things that are still unknown as it relates to that. And really tried to bring it back to, you know, using science in this area to help explain it, right? So sharing data, investigating physical objects, right? And pursuing more, you know, open-funded research. So his was probably the most, I don't know, not realistic, but he was not one of the people that were drinking Kool-Aid.
So can I just say then on that, because that's really, that those chats can really interest me particularly, because I like hearing from people, whether it's a guest or outside the show, who aren't UFO folks, who are happy to come in and have a conversation about it. And you don't expect them to be all in on aliens and interdimensional beings and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And you hear a good mix of either disagreeing, debunking, or actually I think it holds more weight when they do bite onto something to say, but this is interesting, but this needs more study. But when James was, you know, you say debunking some of those events, I won't ask you to go into lots of detail, I'll wait for those videos to come out, but was it a case of he just didn't buy into it, or did he present data hypotheses that made you think?
My recollection of it, and people probably kill me on this, is that he kind of yada yada'd them, but then actually moved in and talked about, like, for the Nimitz encounter, right? And he said, like, dropping from 60,000, that would have been 20,000 miles per hour, which would require 180 megawatts. And he was like, that's far beyond any current propulsion system, right? So he was still, like, acknowledging a lot of those, and then would take us through the reality of, like, fission or antimatter as a, you know, a viable energy source.
Sure.
Just saying that, like, based on the size, it wouldn't make sense, right? Like, it would, like, for a single warp drive, like, right now, require basically a global scale energy, right? So it just wasn't possible at this point in time. And so I think his main point is that the science doesn't show it yet, right? Or they can't, just because you believe it doesn't mean that it's actually true.
Sure, which is very fair, which I like to hear that kind of discussion. I don't always necessarily agree with folks like that, but I appreciate their backgrounds and where they're coming from. And I suppose similar to us, they have an understanding of how the world works based on their professional background, academic background, or academic upbringing, you know, what they've based their whole working career on. And then they are presented with information or data or limited data, which is probably the problem. And are told, here's something which, like you say, dropped from 60,000 feet to right above sea level in 1 second. And he's saying, nah, it's not possible. But
yeah,
there's other folks there in that room who would probably be able to say in his ear, it happened. And that gets people like that on board, hopefully.
Or they'll want to go do the math, right? Or go see the evidence to help figure that out. And I'll give James a lot of credit, because you could tell that it was a differing opinion than a lot of the attendees, but James was there all day. He was talking with people in the halls. Like, I mean, he's a brilliant guy. So there's, you know, not a lack of confidence there, but he was definitely engaging with everybody. So I give James a lot of credit.
Awesome. I have looked up James on LinkedIn and we'll drop him a message. So thanks for that one.
Awesome. And then the next ones for me were actually, was probably more of like the one that I was the most interested in was Rizwan Virk's speech and some of the aerospace insights, because I've been trying to figure out is like what happens post-disclosure, right? Or mid to post-disclosure, right? Like where, like there's going to be a lot of work that needs to be done. And it's not, it's like I said before, I don't have a PhD or any of these other things. So I got to figure out where that's at, if it's even that possible. And he actually walked through a lot of like, what does an ecosystem look like for building an industry? Talked a lot about like, what was the model that worked within Silicon Valley of like, what were the different players and why did that work? You know, part of that being that like, there was lots of failure, but there was also, you know, lots of recirculation of the people who tried and failed would move on and do something else and succeed. Mm-hmm. And then talked about a little bit more about making sure to get some additional funding for research. And then also pushing forward for like a SpaceX prize, like item as it's related to UAP.
Yep. Yeah, I like Riz, and I had him on a couple of years ago now talking about simulation theory, which I know he's big on.
Yes.
He's written a couple of books on that as well. So maybe if folks are newer to the podcast in the last year or so, those interviews you may have missed, I'd recommend going back, because he's a great guy and great to talk to, like you say, as well. So really good to see him involved in that. And was it Jonathan Bert who was the next guy?
Yes. So he kind of was discussing a lot of the intersection of UAP and AI. And then he was like, I think it all started off with they wanted to have a security system put around a nuclear plant, I think it was. And so they put these sensors out there and they started getting all of this anomalous data. And that is kind of like what kind of turned Jonathan into looking at some of this. Like, I don't think he was going out for it. Mm-hmm. I think probably the highlight from that discussion was the need for more contextual data, right? They said, you know, the vectorized data is great, but it isn't sufficient enough, like, for them to reach a comprehensive analysis. And that, so for me, that was like the biggest takeaway or where I'm kind of like focusing on is the data as it relates to this. Because Gary Nolan called out, I think, on the first day, he was like, hey, we still don't have the database of databases, right? There's a lot of folks that are building databases out there, but how they're going to work together or how people access them, it's not clear to me what the answer is or who's organizing that.
And that probably, Mark, echoes the Senate hearing that happened, and Dr. John Kozlowski was asked about, I'm sure it was the Senate hearing, was asked about academia and how involved it is, and he mentioned that Arrow and the organizations like it need to get academics more involved, because when they do go out to universities to speak to professors, PhDs, masters, they are able to give such a limited data set, if any data at all, based on what they're looking to get information on. They struggle to get folks involved, and you can understand why professors, academics, you know, all that kind of stuff are reluctant to get involved in a sensational topic anyway, but then they're given so little data to actually work with. Where do they start?
Well, yeah, and then if they have nothing to work from, right, I think that's a key point. And I think that's one of the things that I want to see to push is, like, how do we make, even though it's like largely available, the archives of the impossible, right? Like, how do we connect that up with reports that are coming out of MUFON, with vector data that is coming out of the Phenom app, right? Like, what story do those three tell, right? If you can not link them together, right? I think what a lot of people were talking about was, how can AI help us make these connections, right, across these disparate data systems? So I think that's probably what I came away with, like, most fascinated.
And at that point, you're kind of racing towards the end of the day, am I right?
Yes, and then that ended with Carl Nell and Gary Nolan, and they went over what is called the Hilbert problems, which I didn't totally understand and probably still need to understand who Hilbert was. But basically ran through about 40 or so questions in different areas. I really wish they would have had probably about 3 hours to go through all 40 of those questions, because they couldn't hit all of them. But I do like that those questions exist. You'll see some of them. I think I've seen some people post them on Twitter. I'm excited to go through that one again and think a little bit more about the questions in each part of, you know, whether it was society, government, technology, like, there were all kinds of questions. So which tells me it's like, someone's already been thinking about this. Some of these may already have answers, but it's definitely something interesting to check out.
And at the end of the day, what was the overall message? Was there a call to arms, a call to action, or anything like that from Gary or Peter?
I think the call to action is continue doing the work, right? Let's make sure that we're being scientific about it. And then, you know, be brave and continue doing the work.
Awesome. And how did you come away then from this? As someone who was invited, you've got an expertise that could be useful. Have you got any ideas and how you could be involved in this? Or are you hopeful of that kind of, that professionalism going forward, being able to be something that can contribute?
Yes, definitely. I'm going to sniff around a little bit and talk with a couple of different people that I met there. As it relates to the data, because I'm sure other people have already thought about this. So I don't want to also be like, hey, I've got an idea. And they'd be like, yeah, so-and-so has already done this. So I want to figure out who that may be and then who I can get involved with and then figure out how best to, you know, to share and federate data, you know, across this topic.
Awesome. Well, let me ask just before I let you go, Mark, because you've been so good with your time. I want to know, what are your big hopes or maybe swings for the fences in 2025?
I think it's the continued disclosure. I think I've come to terms that there isn't going to be Morgan Freeman coming out and announcing to the world that there are aliens or that there's a non-human intelligence. I think it's going to pick up in speed, and I think it will end up being a slow disclosure when we all of a sudden just look at each other and go, well, it's here. And for 2025, I'm really hoping that the legislation in the United States gets passed that has some teeth in it, that kind of opens up some of those doors, some of that information. I'm also of the belief, though, I do agree with coming out of this, that there are things that, you know, I'm okay with the government keeping secret, but I would like them to open up you know, some of the basis of our reality or information that they have related to it.
Awesome. Listen, Mark, it's been wonderful speaking with you. Next time I do a listener call in, it'd be really good to hear you back on with your thoughts on anything involved in the UAP topic. But well done in that report, because it was wonderful. Your notes were fantastic as well. So yeah, really good to speak to you. And maybe I'll get to meet you face to face at one of these one day.
Perfect. That sounds great, Andy. I appreciate it. And keep up what you're doing. I really enjoy your podcast. You keep a even keel as you go through what is probably a very sensational topic. So I definitely appreciate that voice.
Cheers, mate. Thank you.
All right.
Next on the line, I have another listener who is joining me for a return to the Listener Call-In Show, but also a listener who also attended the Sol Foundation's symposium. Tim, out in San Francisco. Tim, welcome back.
Hey, Eddie. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you on. And Tim, you didn't have far to travel for this symposium, did you, compared to maybe some?
No, just right over the hill. So it's about 4 miles from my house over to Fort Mason in the Marina area, which was highly convenient.
Amazing. And Tim, I think what's interesting for your experience, because I've just spoken to Mark in Philadelphia, who traveled, who attended his first symposium. You were at the first Sol event last year, weren't you? So do you want to just touch on, because we never spoke about it, I don't think, last year, did we, the event last year, but also how it maybe differed from this year's?
Yeah, absolutely. So last year at Stanford University, obviously it was their inaugural symposium. I think that they didn't really know what to expect from the speakers, from the crowd. Felt very ad hoc, but they did a great job with the Stanford events team at the engineering center there to bring everybody together in what I would consider a very academic and collegiate space. Very, very simple setup, very dense schedule of speakers, and really, really thorough talks. I think that there was a lot of reverence in the room. I feel like there were just, you know, a mix of media and government and private enterprise and public. It was a great crowd. I think that similar to this year, there was a lot of exuberance and, you know, expectant and excited crowd. I think that from a production angle and just a general attendee experience, it was much different for me last year than this year, because I actually helped with the production this year. So a great show all around last year, but this year they definitely stepped it up a notch.
And being involved with the production, I take it you are going to say production will be even better this year than it was in the first go round.
I have to. Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it was a much different canvas this year. They went to Fort Mason in San Francisco. It's essentially on a pier. It's a big white box. You have to bring everything in. So a much more curated and designed space, not just in what is tantamount to a conference room, right? Mm. So this is much, much different. Between the academics and the personnel at Sol, we got to develop all the creative for the conference from the ground up and really design the attendee experience all the way through from all the touch points from registration through what they were seeing visually in the space, how comfortable that space was, all the way through to their experience in the Cal Theater, which is where the programming was. So very different format, but I think that it went very, very well. I talked to a lot of people that were just thrilled to be there. Once again, very similar to last year, very enthusiastic, expectant, excited. And all in all, I think people had a great, great time, great experience, and we're happy to take in the content, happy to network.
I suppose you've got a unique perspective then, based on you've been to both of the conferences. You've been involved heavily in the setup of this one as well. From that production angle, your experience is much more in depth. Have you seen an impact or progress or movement from the first event before and up until this one? Have you seen any tangibles from that?
Yeah. So as far as the mission and goals of Seoul, there's definitely more academic folks coming on board that are interested. There's definitely a more robust interest in investment and donation toward the Seoul's mission. I think that they increased their attendeeship by over 50% this year. Last year, it was about 300 people. This year, it was nearly 430 or 450. So a huge increase there. I think that, you know, like I said, they had such a great mix of private enterprise, of academics, of government folks, and then just the general public, who a lot of whom are researchers and or experiencers and or very, you know, zealous in this space as well. So I think that they're tracking against their goals very, very well. I don't have any reporting on that at this moment, but, you know, subjectively speaking, I think that that's a fair statement.
So talk about some of your standouts from the actual event in the 2 days itself then. What was your keys, takeaways?
Yeah. So it's funny you ask, because being on the back of house in the production side, I didn't get to watch all the talks. So I'm really looking forward to watching them over video. But I did get to stand side stage and talk, you know, watch a few of the talks. Watching Eric Davis and Peter Skafish talk was incredible. Mm-hmm. Watching Carl Nell and Gary Nolan talk was incredible. Those two were standouts for me. I think that Eric Davis really, he's such a prolific figure in this conversation and this topic, and he really is so straightforward and dry with his base of knowledge and to the point and just the facts kind of guy. And he really brought the room down with some of the things he said.
He's pretty elusive because he doesn't do the podcast circuit. He doesn't jump onto mainstream media. He doesn't look for Joe Rogan. I mean, maybe he does, but doesn't get invited. I don't know. But it doesn't seem to be that he courts any real public attention, does he, with the UFO topic? And does that come across, and why do you think that is?
Yeah, I think that Eric is not here for self-promotion. I think that he very much stays in his lane with the academic circles, with the government circles, and also, you know, with private enterprise and on the investment side. I think he lends a lot of credibility to this entire movement, given the fact that his involvement with NIDS all the way through OSAP, ATIP, etc. He's got quite the resume, right? He's got quite the bona fides to go along with this, but he is such a kind and easygoing guy. And I just don't think he has any interest in being in the limelight and or, doing anything but trying to provide, a level of information and a quality of information that he can in certain formats. I think that the stature of this group speaks for itself. And I think that's probably why he was comfortable coming to this one and interacting with the public. And, he's very well, I don't want to say protected, but he's very well embraced by Gary and Jonathan and Peter at Seoul. I think that they're very, very close and good friends. So the format made sense for him to come out and speak.
A big highlight folks are going to take away from it, and obviously you wouldn't do this anyway, but I would ask, we don't discuss any details. James Fox, the program, rounded off the end of day one. It was a badly kept secret because I think a couple of days before the event, a lot of folks online were speculating it's probably going to be the program. James Fox's long-awaited documentary. How was that for you? Did you get a chance to watch it?
I did, yeah. So I think I saw at least 75% of it. I had to pop out here and there, but it was great. It was very well done. The type of quality you would expect from James Fox. The room felt like a party. Everybody was hooting and hollering for the film. A lot of information that we already know, but really drawing a through line from what's happened over the last 7-8 years to all of the revelations that have happened with Grush and then this year's hearings and with the NASA hearing last year, and just drawing a really clear line that there's something going on and that there clearly is a government effort underway that's not being disclosed to Congress. It was a great film. James is wonderful. He was sitting, I think, two rows in front of my friend Ramesh and I, and we got to interact with him a lot. It was great. He was, very effusive. He was talking to everybody. He was excited. It felt great.
I've got a horrendous memory, and I've probably said this before on the podcast. It's really, really bad in general with life. I remember the strangest things, but I enjoy documentaries like this because, like you say, it brings things that it might be stuff we already know, but it's brought together and packaged in such a way that makes me go, oh, right, yep, that happened. Oh, actually, I forgot about that. Or I never thought about linking that to that. That's really interesting. And I think these things can serve as really nice milestones or stops along the way. I enjoyed the Beyond series that was on MGM Plus recently. Different audience that's being catered to. But again, a lot of stuff we know, but it pulls things together again to say, remember this, remember this, remember this. Here's perhaps why we are where we are. And I've mentioned before, Tim, you'll know this, and you, I imagine you agree, we're not going to get smoking gun disclosure in a documentary or a book or a TV show, no matter how many episodes that TV show has, or a podcast. It's not going to happen. Any huge announcement is 60 minutes or at 24 hours notice, massive press conference, you know, all that kind of stuff. But these documentaries certainly serve their purpose. Is there any new information in there that, again, you've saw three quarters of it that you think people are going to be pleasantly surprised?
There is definitely some new information. There are new characters and whistleblowers that come out in this film. Some are anonymous, some are not. So that's new. But yeah, Andy, I think you're right. I don't think we're ever going to have that type of moment. I think that these types of films, and James knows this very well, serve, you know, as a point of record to tie this story together and to push it forward and to serve it to mainstream audiences that really do need, you know, to connect the dots a bit more. So he's really drilled in on, like I said, the crash retrieval reverse engineering program in this one. You know, the phenomenon, that film was more of an overview of what's happened historically and up to date with sightings and contact and you know, what's been reported from the public, private and government channels over time. But yeah, I think that's a fair assumption. There's never going to be that one moment. But I do think that James is really an auteur with packaging this in a way that is digestible, it's understandable, and is also entertaining. Takeaway that I had also from this film is a lot of the personalities in this film were also at the conference. So you've got Leslie Kane, you've got Ryan Graves, et cetera, and many others. You know, I had the privilege of being, you know, back of house with these folks, getting to know them, having personal conversations with them. These are just people, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like these are just people with everyday concerns and normal lives. And they are really just doing their best to present their beliefs and their information and the facts as they know them to, you know, to the world and to this community. And it's really good to remember that these folks are, they can be seen as celebrity, but they are just normal everyday people. And they're really happy to be doing this. And they donate a lot of their time and energy and effort to have this conversation. And it just became more and more clear with the conversations I was having backstage with them. It was really, that was a delight to me. That was probably the highlight of the entire show, is getting to know some of these folks.
No, that's really good to hear. And I think you're right with James, the way he packages these documentaries together. You're never going to tell a friend who has no interest in UFOs everything you can in one day about the topic and bring them up to speed. But I think you could do a lot worse than sit them down in front of a couple of James Fox documentaries and say, watch these, and you'll have a pretty good idea of what's going on and why we are where we are right now. And it's a good launching point to go on from that. So that's what I'm kind of expecting from the program. And like I said, James is coming on the podcast in the next couple of weeks. So I'll be looking forward to getting a copy of that. I've already pre-ordered it anyway, but hopefully I get a sneaky one before it comes out to review.
I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised. It's a great film. And like I said, there's a lot of info that's recapped, but it's also, there is some new stuff that's, you know, riveting and very interesting.
And what about day two of the symposium? What was jumping out to you there?
Well, I think that the capstone was absolutely Carl Nell and Gary Nolan at the end. But there were great talks throughout. Like I said, I didn't get to see all of them, but I did watch side stage at the very end of the show. Gary and Carl Nell go through their talk, which was really fascinating. Similar to Carl's talk last year, he, you know, has a really strategic mind. So talking through these different lines of effort of how to approach certain problems that the UAP reality, you know, poses with whether it's government, academia, the public, just so well thought out, such a deep dive into, you know, the mind of somebody who is not only philosophical, but also pragmatic. And just having somebody like Carl and somebody like Gary on stage talking, I mean, you can't help but learn and elevate your understanding of this topic and so many others based on their perspective. So definitely a highlight. I think that a lot of people you talk to will say the same. There were other great talks that day too. Like I said, I only saw bits and pieces, so I can't comment on all of them. I can't wait to watch the videos like a lot of the listeners. But that was definitely a standout for me.
So having been to the first and second conferences, do you see this set up having a future? Are they looking to do a third, a fourth, and carry this on? And what do you think the benefit of those are going to be?
Yeah, so they're absolutely going to do more. I think that they will continue to do an annual symposium, likely in and around California or somewhere in the States. My guess is that they will probably look to Europe to try to stand something up there as well. I can't confirm or deny that. That's just speculation on my part, but I do think that that would be the next step. And I think that the Soul is really positioned right now to get their fundraising engine running and continue to do more research, continue to put out more white papers, continue to engage, tastemakers in both academia and in the private sector to raise money and to raise awareness. I think we can absolutely expect them to continue to lead this conversation also with the congressional committees who are making decisions on legislation. So that's a huge piece of their mission, is to affect, the legislative bodies that can affect change. So there were absolutely talks about that too. Once again, I did not see them all, so I need to go back and watch once they're released. But I think that you're going to see more growth from Soul in the future.
Any indication as to when we will get those talks released?
Not at this moment. So I don't have anything to do with the post-production. I'm not sure what their timeline is. I know they had they had some technical challenges last year with getting those cut downs made. But I think that this year they had a really robust media crew there and a content capture crew on the stage and throughout the conference. So hopefully they've got a faster schedule this year to get those out.
Two things to finish off with then, Tim, because I enjoy speaking to you. You're part of the Discord chat and stuff with the group on there. What's been a big standout for you in 2024? Maybe a comment on the hearing, something like that. And then I'd like to know separately, what are your hopes for 2025?
Yeah, great question. The congressional hearings for me were a huge standout. I loved listening to all the speakers there. I thought that Schellenberger was a great addition, a surprise. I talked to Michael Schellenberger last year at Seoul, and he is as just the facts kind of guy. Like, this is not something that he's passionate about, but he cannot ignore the information that his sources are really bringing to him. It's fascinating to talk to him. And then I was so just delighted to see Lou, talking to Congress. Like, that was a huge moment for me. I've been following his story for a long time. And then Tim Gallaudet, I talked to him at the conference at length about, his testimony and really the bravery and the passion that these guys and these men and women are showing in these arenas. I thought that was a huge highlight for me. I was just so delighted to see all of them up there testifying and being so blunt and having our congressional leaders ask these incredible questions. It's just, I'd never thought I'd see the day. So that was a huge highlight for me. In 2025, I really want to contribute more. I'm excited to, see the mission and goals of Seoul moving forward. I was really privileged and just feel really honored to have been able to contribute some of my time to their mission this year with this show. Hopefully I can engage them again next year and help out if it's necessary and if they have a need. I think that I'm just, I want to push the conversation further. My goal is to always bring one person into this conversation who is a total novice, that's never, that's never considered the reality of this topic, and to get somebody else interested on the level in which I'm interested. So that's one goal for 2025 for me.
Awesome. Always good to speak to you, Tim, and well done being so involved again this year.
Thank you.
Like I said to the previous listener, Mark, I was really hoping to get out to Seoul this year. I will make a point of almost definitely getting there next year, if I'm allowed to attend. It would be nice to meet
folks. You should, Andy. I think that you would just love all the networking that happens. And like I said, all of these attendees who come to something like Seoul and look around, and you can just feel it in the room. Everybody there has this sentiment of, oh, these are my people. You know, there's just this very quick social lubricant that happens in Catalyst because everybody speaks the same language for the most part. You can have conversations in depth that you normally wouldn't have outside in your normal life or at work or with your friends or family. It's really, really fantastic. So I really hope you can make it. One quick thing that I want to do before we sign off is I do want to say a couple of thank yous. First, thank you to Gary Nolan. Thank you to Peter Scoffish and Jonathan Berthe for having me contribute this year. It was a huge honor. I also want to say thank you to Diane Dalton, who is Peter's executive assistant. She did an incredible job with this show. And then we had some amazing volunteers. And so if you guys want to volunteer for Seoul, I definitely encourage everybody to reach out to them. Our volunteers included Kylie Sultan, Krister Swenson, Mason Harrison, and there were many others. But those three in particular did a huge lift this year and helped me a lot on the production end. So just wanted to get that in before we sign off.
Awesome, and well done to all the folks involved. And again, Tim, always a pleasure speaking, mate.
Thanks, Andy. Appreciate it.
Joining me on the line, I've got returning to the listener call-in, Chase out in Texas. Chase, how are we?
Doing well, thanks. How are you doing, Andy?
I'm good. Probably a little colder than you are right now out in Texas. I don't get the feeling Texas ever gets cold. But yeah, what's it like out there just now?
It'll be 86 degrees today. Very warm.
Yeah, well, I've just been showing off Chase my heated blanket, haven't I? He can attest I do indeed have a heated blanket. But listen, I'll be really cheesy here, Chase, and say the UFO conversation has been heating up towards the end of the year to still a pretty mixed reaction. But this listener, Colin, is all about the listeners like yourself who have attended one of the recent hearings or events that have happened, and you yourself were out at the hearings in Washington, is that right?
Yeah, the one a couple of weeks ago.
So I think that was the 13th of November,
correct,
if my memory serves. So tell us about that experience. What was it like? Did you have to get there early?
Oh, yeah. I did a whole bunch of research the night before, and I had a hard time finding, like, how do you actually get in the building and what time do they open and all that. I put all that together, and yeah, I got up at about 5 a.m. I had a lift over from the hotel to the building. I was there. I arrived at 6, and when I arrived there, I walked up to the visitor's entrance, and there was no one there. And I think I texted you and Dan, and I was like, I may be in the wrong place. I don't know where I'm at. And then shortly thereafter, another person who I had been chatting to on Reddit showed up, and I said, are you so-and-so? And he said, yeah. And so we basically sat there for a little while, and then we were joined by Charlie, I think his name is Parker. It was a filmmaker, documentary filmmaker.
Okay.
Charlie Parrish. I'm sorry, Charlie.
Yeah,
Charlie Parrish. He was in line with us and then did some interviews, and we were there until 7:30 a.m. when they opened up, and we got inside and realized that there was another entrance to the building as well, where there was far more people in line, including like professional line sitters that were being paid $40, $50 an hour just to sit in line.
I have heard about this. Yeah. So interesting job. But if it pays well, then fair enough.
Right. Yeah. My daughter lives in DC and she was saying, I think I'm going to go get a job over there. But anyway, yeah. So we got in line. Honestly, the best part of the entire thing, short of being in the room, was being in line with all the other people in the community. I mean, it was just great meeting people like Charlie. And then just the cavalcade of sort of UFO celebrities that would walk up and down the line. I got to meet Ryan Graves, who I've been chatting to, and got to meet Danny Sheehan and a whole bunch of people that were just walking past and were, you know, more than willing to just stop and talk to people, answer questions. Tons of podcasters, tons of interviews going on. And so to hear people's stories over their shoulders was really interesting.
And what was the atmosphere like? And I have I don't know if it's a worry or a concern, if that's the right way to put it, because it's not exactly like high threat level, but that these things can turn into a bit of a circus, and that with the media watching and the outside world having an eye on this sort of event, I worry that it becomes a thing And it's almost like, you know, when we had Storm Area 51 and people were dressing up as aliens and making a big thing of it. And I don't want these events, as serious as they are, to become that. I think what you've said about being something for people in the community and folks who want to be there, who want to meet others, who want to get involved in the conversation, maybe perhaps in those grassroots political movements, wonderful. But was there any air of it becoming a bit of a circus, or were you quite happy the whole atmosphere?
Yeah, no, I was worried about that as well. I went to Contact in the Desert this last summer, and there, I was a little bit worried. I was like, if we show up looking a little bit more on that side, then we may not be taken seriously. But I would say that the decorum was very, very well handled. Everyone dressed nice. I mean, you're required to dress nice to get into the hearing, so people were dressed up. I would say the line was very orderly. The security who was checking on us constantly were, you know, the crowd was really good with them. Their interviews that were happening were all seemed like they were all being seriously taken in terms of both the interviewer and the interviewee.
Yeah.
And I was able to hear a couple of I don't think it was Gadi Schwartz, but there was somebody from another major network, and they were asking really serious questions and getting good answers. And so I was happy about that.
So tell us then, you get inside, you've got a seat in the actual hearing. What was that like? And talk about the event and any thoughts you have yourself.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, first of all, we didn't think we were going to get in since we were so far back in the line. I think we were about 60 back in the line. And the guy that was next to me said he had gone to the one last year with David Grush, and he said, there's no way we're getting in. He said, there's only about 30 seats in there. So anyway, we didn't expect to. And then when the line started moving, we all got excited, and this lady starts counting down the line. She goes, 1, 2, 3, 4. And she counted me, and she goes, okay, you guys come in. And then I think they let in 3 more people after us. So it was we got in the very back of the room, extremely exciting. Everyone was very excited. Security was very intense. Lots of security, lots of police. The Congress people were coming and going. There was so many staffers in the room coming and going on the dais. Of course, you've got the camera people as well as all the people in the media pit in front. And then just sitting behind, you know, Lou Elizondo and seeing the people in the room, Leslie Kane was in front of us. I mean, everybody was there. And so just sitting there listening to the questions, the conversations. And then the other part that I think was interesting that wasn't seen on camera was all of the back and forth that was happening between the Congress people, the staffers, and people coming in and out of the room as they were focused on the witnesses. They were having conversations on the dais, talking about especially the 12-page document. That sort of seemed to cause a buzz up there. And then once it was distributed, there was a lot of page flipping. There was a lot of staffer talking. And then once the question started, it felt like it was just, I mean, it was very rapid in terms of just keeping it going. I was disappointed in some of the questions that were asked. I really felt like some people should have given their time to other people that had better questions, because there was a couple. Bobert was ridiculous, but other than her, there was a couple of them that I just thought, man, you really should be asking better questions when you have witnesses like this.
Yeah, I think it's been a couple of weeks now and they've been covered pretty extensively, but it's interesting you share that same aspect, that there were a few folks who either seemed a little sensational or they weren't very well versed in what they were going to actually be talking about. If you asked me to go and interview today a quantum physicist, mathematician, PhD professor, and said, yeah, go and have a chat about that, I could fumble through it, but you could tell I had no clue what I was talking about. And I got the feeling that these people had prepared questions from maybe even staffers who had seen little clips or bits and maybe scrolled through X or Reddit and came out with this stuff. But you're quite right. On the day, though, were you happy with what you were hearing? Is that sort of what you expected, the questions? What was your overall thoughts coming out of it? And I suppose I'll ask you, separate the fact you were there for the event, which was no doubt a great thing, but the actual content, how did you feel about it?
Yeah, it's a good question. It was part of it was just sort of the hype of being there and being in the room as the questions were being asked. And hearing the responses in real time, I think, was extremely exciting. But it also made it difficult to listen to the actual content or think about it as it was happening, because you didn't have time. So there was a lot of sort of retrospection afterwards. But yeah, in the room, I would say The energy was very high. I thought it was interesting that when they started, that after someone would finish, I think after the first person spoke, somebody started to clap and then everyone looked at them. Okay, there's no clapping. We all learned right then there's no clapping. And until the very end, they actually had a little bit of a clapping moment. But yeah,
okay.
I was, if I was looking at it as someone who didn't go to it, I would be like, it was good. It progressed the conversation. It put things on record that needed to be on record. Like when she asked Lou those rapid fire questions and she got to, you know, do we have alien craft? And he said, yes. I was like, okay, that's on the record now. So it was good for that purpose. Other than that, I really wish that there had been some new evidence or more direct evidence from some of the witnesses.
Yeah. I was going to ask then standout moments. So you're talking about Nancy Mace, rapid fire questions at Lou Elizondo, who I think on the day, just personally for what I was looking for from these hearings, was the only witness that really contributed anything. And even then there was disappointments and that comes from also Congress maybe not being as a whole prepared, like you say, some folks completely wasting their time to what it could have been. So any other standout moments for you?
I thought it was important that they were, because I think some people were disappointed by the fact that they were asking questions and being told, I can't answer that. We have to have it in the conversation in a skiff. I think people were disappointed by that. But before they even, I think it was before they turned the cameras on, I had heard some people talking and you could overhear them when they were saying, we're going to ask questions that they're not going to be able to answer, but we need it on the record. And that was before they started. So I was glad that they did that. But no, I didn't get to attend the after party thing that they were doing at New Paradigm Institute. But otherwise, I would say it was totally worth going. I would highly recommend anyone that gets a chance to go just for the experience and for the community aspect. I met several people online that, you know, are probably going to be friends now. So it was really good.
One other thing I'd like to know, which came across from the camera point of view when you're watching it, was as congressmen and women finished their questioning, they're clearly busy people. They got up and left. So by the end, it looked incredibly quiet. Obviously, the whole audience is still there behind the camera, but you're only seeing the witnesses' heads and the seats kind of empty. Did that come across in the room? Were people surprised that they were leaving, or did it not really impact things?
No, it's interesting. I think it was, again, before they actually started recording for the live stream, somebody came up and said, Congress people have other sessions that they're required to be attending simultaneously. So they will be coming in and out. Please excuse this, distraction or whatever. And then they started. So I think they had told us that was what was going to happen. And I think one of the Congress people even repeated it during the session.
Awesome. Well, Chase, to finish up, I'd love to ask, we're kind of hitting the end of November now, about to go into December. What are you looking forward to this last part of the year then, in terms of the UFO field? Is it one of the documentaries coming out? Are you expecting any more information to drop, or how do you feel?
I'm super excited. We have a UFO club at my work, and so what I've been doing is trying to line up people to talk to and have conversations with in the club. Going to the event, I was able to meet several people I would not have been able to meet any other way and have those conversations. So yeah, that was really cool. I'm excited. I was very excited that Christopher Mellon was providing background for the staffers and the Congress people. And we had a chat the other day where he said that, you know, he's continuing to help on that effort. So I'm excited by the fact that we now have a bit of momentum going, and I'm hoping that that continues to carry forward into the new year with some of the promises of what's going to be revealed, you know, by people going into the next administration. So I am excited about that. I'm also very excited to see the videos from Seoul. I want to, you know, hear what they were talking about there. So hopefully that comes out soon as well.
Give me one swing for the fences hope in 2025 that we get.
The thing that I saw that gave me a lot of hope was someone said that they had met with Lou at one of his live events here in Dallas, I think. And they said that the person said, I'm 58. Am I going to see disclosure? And Lou said, by the time you're 60, you'll see disclosure. And so I was like, okay, that's good. I do think that we are going to have some type of major event, and I'm looking forward to that happening, but I have no idea what it's going to be.
Awesome. Chase, as always, thank you so much for sharing the experience, what it was like at the hearing. I'm sure other folks who maybe weren't sure about wanting to attend will have some food for thought. I'd love to get over for one of those, wife depending, being allowed to do that with the kids and all. But yeah, thanks very much for calling up, mate, and good to speak to you.
You too, mate. Thanks.
That is all for this episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. Don't forget to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. Apple and Spotify do make a huge difference to the algorithm. If you're checking the show on YouTube, please don't forget to like and leave a comment on here as well. Any sharing you do is very much appreciated on any social media platform. And finally, you can listen to shows ad-free and sponsor-free in their glorious full versions by subscribing for less than the price of a coffee on Apple, Spotify, just search That UFO Podcast Premium. YouTube, you can sign up and be a member, or you can do that through patreon.com. Thank you very much for listening, folks.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer. A little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right inside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue. I don't think he expected me to see his ass, but I'd had some champagne and smoked a little rat.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to Ramp.com and love finance again.